there was time for giving him sponge and all that. I used to do that, his body and all that. So he told me that we'll see whether his face is properly shaved or not, clean shaved. How do you like it? He had shaved it himself with the shaver. I said, well, you have done a very good job, Baba, today. It's all clean. And then, till the last, we were in very good humor, you see. You'd crack jokes at the mandali and we would say something. I remember that he telling, you know, the women would give him something to drink or eat, soup or something, fruit juice or apple pulp or anything like that. Then he would want to, he would take some and then distribute with, to the mandali there. So, we knowing fully well that he needed some sort of nourishment, I started this little thing that, so what I would do, I would keep a paan in my pocket, you see. And it is customary that one has a paan in the mouth and he wouldn't want to eat anything. So whenever I knew that now the cup is offered now of fruit juice, I'm sure that how you have it, half of it. So from where do we repeat now? On the last day, say a week prior to his dropping the body, Baba would be given some nourishing diet, you see, like some pulp of a fruit, you see, like apples or something like that, or the soup of lentils that he liked. What he would do is take some of it and then start distributing it to the mandali, you see. But then the doctor wanted him to consume the whole thing because the quantity that was given was very little, and even that he wouldn't take it. So I started playing a trick with him, you see. What he would do is take half of it when doctor forced him to take, and then the other half he would pass it on to me to consume it. So after having taken all this, you see, for some days, I thought that now there should be a check put on this. So what I did was I started carrying a paan with me, you know. Paan, it's customary here in India that when we have paan in our mouth, nobody would want us to, nobody can force us to eat anything, you see. Because paan is such a thing that it's taken at the last, after we have had our meals or food or anything. So on the last day, I remember, you see, Baba wanted me to have whatever was left over, because he would pass it on to me. So I knew that he was having a cup of fruit juice there, and knew very well that within a short time he'll now pass the cup on to me to finish it off. So without his watching me, I put paan in my mouth, and then when he started passing me the cup, he handed over the cup to me. I just expressed to him that he should finish it off because doctor wants him to have good nourishment and all that. He says, no, you have it. He gestured that I should have it. I said, but I showed my tongue. I said, Baba, I have paan in my mouth. He says, you have started playing tricks with me too. Yes. And for a long time, Baba didn't have his bath or anything of the sort. The last years, he wouldn't want to have bath or anything. So then he wouldn't listen to the women also. So then when the women, then naturally they would pass a word on to me saying that, hey, let's do something. Because it's not that his body would stink or his clothes would stink, nothing of the sort. Beautiful fragrance would come out every time, nothing of the sort. And not a fragrance or a perfume or anything of the sort, but that body was like a child's body, you know. Have you had that feeling of a child's body like that? So. But then doctors were more particular about his pores. The body needs rubbing, you see. The pores, because skin forms there on the end. Unless and until there is rubbing over the skin, the pores do not become what you call open, you see. Naturally, perspiration should ooze out of the pores to keep the body clean, the internal things. So I would just tell Baba and then beg of him, and just in a nice way, we'd tell him stories about the must and how he did that and how he coaxed and all that. So somehow or other, you see, we fixed a regime that, well, every alternate day, Baba would give me some time to massage his body and to, what do you call that, you see? what is the word for it? Sponge his body with water. So naturally, exactly at the time, I would remind him. I would be there all the time, naturally. The time would be there, so I would start. Without reminding him, I would start preparations. Because if I were to remind him, immediately he would say, well, we'll see it from the next day, you see. So it was no use. I did do that in the beginning. So then I said, it's no use now. What we should do is to just start the work without reminding him. So Gaver would join me. And we, no sooner, you see, the time would be there, because he had fixed the time himself in the beginning. So as soon as on the quiet, you see, I'll take the wet sponge and put it on his body, you see, and start doing. Baba said, what are you doing? I said, Baba, it's time now for your sponge. And then do it, you see. So likewise, first I would start the massaging his body with oil or anything of the sort and all that. And he'll feel very rested and all that. I was good in doing that, you see. Yes, sometimes I would make him go sleep also with that massage. He would do it here. There was a couch over here. Here also he would lie down, sometimes in the afternoon when there was no work, or there. But then this was too much for him, you see, this sponging. He didn't like. So, well, I used to tell Gaver that my brother would send what is that other thing? Forget the name also. What's that you put in the water? Lavender water. You see? So that we'll put lavender there, you see, and in the water, and then sponge the whole body and make it fresh. You'd look very rose-like, you see, with that. You see. So one day he said, the way I would coax, you see, first he said, first I began with this, you see, Baba, your soles, you just see your soles, how fresh they were, and now they are thick with leather, you see. Now the skin has turned into leather. It's not nice. You must have some sort of, the soles must also breathe, you see. And without rubbing, how can they breathe? So I started with the soles first, you see, first day. And then I came as far as the ankles on the same day, you see. Then the next day, soles and ankles and the thighs and loins, you see, and then the waist. So he says, you have learned the tech, say, you are following the same tactics that I did with the musts. I said, yes, well, we learn from you what to do all the time. Was just one little sharp but very short-lived spasm, and that's the end of it. Nearing quarter past 12. It's quarter past 12 now? That's all. That was the end of that advent. Physical advent. I think Hoshang Bharucha has described it in that, in his booklet he wrote, what is it called, The Last Sahavas or something like that. Now what happened is, no sooner Baba dropped the body and people came to know of it, but prior to that also, people would start writing us and would ask us to reply to them. So Jim and Hetty just visualize as to how will it be possible for us who will be all the time near Baba to attend to correspondence at the times. But we did that too, trying to, well, help the people, you see. But then, in spite of it all, people thought that we neglected them and that we kept all the information to ourselves, and we didn't allow the other lovers to share in the information. So, what can we say to that? People felt it that way later on. That's how I was told, you see. But how was it possible for us to do that? It's not possible. Jai Baba. So, we did our best. and left the rest to him. He knew all that also. It was a shock to us too, greater shock to us. What can we do in that respect? And there were not many hands near us, and we were not supposed to call people who were not asked by Baba to come. That was another restriction there. How can we ask anybody to come and help us without asking Baba? And whenever we asked Baba's permission, he wouldn't permit anybody. Only those who were called must come. And they came. The rest who were not called were not supposed to come. What else now? When we are with Baba, naturally people think, those who have come to know Baba, they think and feel how blessed are these people who have been with Baba all these years, have lived with him, so close to him. And there's no doubt in their feeling and thinking in that same way, you see, because we are indeed blessed. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, how will those who have not stayed with him ever know of the feelings that surge within oneself, you see, of those who stay with Baba and live with him? They are all human beings. They are as much human, you see, as those who stay in the world away from Baba's physical presence. Just as the people who live in the world and have their feelings, so also we who live with Baba have had our own feelings, you see. Sometimes it so happens that we begin to feel in his presence a colossal difference. As for example, it so happened with me. When I was not living with Baba, I was considered to be a very mild, quiet type of a person who had, people had never seen me get angry. Never a harsh word have I ever spoken with anybody, you see. They felt that I was a real good lad, you see. And I also was aware of this, that I was a quiet type of a person. I had my anger and my feelings under my control. But after having passed some years with Baba, I used to get very irritated. I used to feel bad about others, you see. In the sense, I felt sometimes myself, I felt superior than others, and sometimes I felt inferior than others, and so forth. So one day, my mind started playing tricks with me and made me feel that, well, Erich, you have been with Meher Baba for so many years and you were so good a lad, you see, before joining him, and now you should be better than what you were before. But what has happened to you? You seem to have lost all that control over your mind and you get irritated and upset with things, you see, that you do not seem to be pleased with or to your if they are not to your satisfaction, and you have become very outspoken, and that you are apt to hurt the feelings of others. So when I started wondering over these things, you see, I felt a bit uneasy. And this feeling, you see, lasted for quite some time, and even it affected my mood and my being with Baba. Baba, the all-knowing one, who always apparently makes us feel that he knows nothing, one day brought about this topic and said, he asked me as to what had happened to me. And, well, I said, there's nothing wrong. He says, well, you don't seem to be in good mood, don't seem to be lively and cheerful. So there's nothing wrong or anything of the sort, but some or other, this thought is now bothering me. And what is the thought, Baba asked me. I said, well, this thought that I, let alone I'm being no better than I was before after joining you, but then I feel as if I was much better before joining you and before living with you, and now I'm somehow or other I feel that I get irritated and upset, and I have lost all the good qualities, so-called good qualities in a man. So Baba smiled at me and was rather, what do you call, interested in my being so depressed and all that, and he told me, he gave me this figure, you see. He said, look at the sugar cane, there is a farm over here nearby, so when it's in full bloom we can see from here, we are sitting out, and he says, the sugar cane is full of sweetness, it has a sweet juice in it, called cane juice, you see. And nobody can imagine, you see, that it has anything other than the sweetness that it possesses. So Baba says, when this juice is extracted out of the cane, and here in India what we do is, we boil the juice in order to convert it into brown sugar. So then Baba gives this figure to bring home to me what's happening within me by staying near him or living near him. He says, what happens is when you collect all the juice, you collect it and pour it in a big cauldron, you see, and then put it on fire. And when it is boiling, the scum comes on the top. So you have seen that? He asked me. I said, yes. He says, did you ever know? When you saw it for the first time, you must have been intrigued that so much dirt and scum and all sorts of things are there, you see, in the sweetness of that sweet sugarcane juice. I said, no, yes, I was in the beginning very intrigued about it, I said. So what happens at the time of boiling, when it gets thoroughly boiled, all that which is considered to be undesirable, unwanted, just floats on the top of it. When it is boiled, when it is about to be crystallized, when that sweetness is about to be crystallized, all the things that are unwanted there, they just float on the surface of it. And the master man who is in charge of the whole thing just collects it every now and then, you see, in a sieve. There's a long bamboo pole with a sieve at the end, a basket you may call it. He collects all that and throws it out of the cauldron, you see, while the liquid is boiling. Likewise, he says, you did not know. You considered yourself to be all sweetness, you see. Like the sugar cane, you thought that you were full of the sweet juice that is there. And then your expressions, of course, when you drink the juice, because it's sweet, and the people who relish it, they just relish the sweetness of it. Little do they know that when the same juice is boiled, you see, so much dirt and rubbish is inside it. Only when it is thoroughly boiled can it come to the surface to be thrown out, so that sweetness may be crystallized. Likewise, in the life of people who live near me, I am fire, he said, and a fire which burns everything. Now, while you are passing your years in my presence, so happens that in that process, things happen within you. And it is equivalent to the juice being boiled and the sweetness being crystallized. It's in that process. So all the scum, all the rubbish that seems apparently visible to you people, and you become cognizant of the things that are unwanted within you, they just come up on the surface and you are made aware of it. And you get frightened with all the things that come out of you. But then you should feel, on the contrary, happy that these things come to the surface to be thrown out. They were there within you, and now you will be that much less of the rubbish that is within you already. So there's nothing to be frightened about it or to feel worried about it. On the contrary, you all should feel happier over this process that is taking place. So that's the answer that Baba gave, you see, to the dilemma that sometimes people who lived with Baba confronted with. So that's one side of it. That's what Hetty was. You asked me as to how I became first the interpreter. I say that there's no first to it, you see. The thing is that it was just a natural process. I first met Baba in the year 1925. That means he had just began his silence, you see, the year when he started observing silence. And I have a faint memory, you see, of having seen him for the first time with slates around him. First time when I saw him was near the Dhuni, and then subsequently I saw him being surrounded with slates and slate pencil. You know those slates that we use in India? I don't know whether you all use it there. Now it's out of vogue. Even babies are made to write on paper or something like that, or boards or something. But we used to, in India, the children used to use slates in their kindergarten. And Baba used to write on slates and converse by writing the answers to the queries or questions put to him by the visitors. So that is easy to read, his writing. He had a very bold hand, you see, and it was easy to read. So I am associated with reading these things, you see, from the time that he started writing on slates. And then after that, our family, my parents, got closer and closer to Baba, and Baba blessed the house where we lived by his frequent visits. So as I grew up, naturally I was so often in his proximity, and then by the time he started visiting our house, he started using the board, the famous board that he used. And sometimes if I am all alone there and there is nobody to interpret or read his board, and if he had to give some instructions or anything for the day to my parents or the family, he would use the board. So I, being a person on the spot, although I was young, I used to read his fingers, and he would go slow with his fingers on the board, so I could decipher. So that's how I had the practice. Gradually, as years passed by, I used to read whenever he used to visit the house. And then, being very sharp, you see, myself, I picked it up. And when I joined Baba in the year 1938, he started conversing with me on the board, and he just followed it. That's all. There was nothing. And as I had a lot of practice afterwards, I could pick it up very fast, and Baba would be very fast with his fingers on the board. So I picked it up. It was just natural. I don't remember as to when I started it, but it was in the natural process. And the board reading was so frequent and such a constant affair, you see, that sometimes it used to fatigue my eyes, and it was tiring to read the board. It was tiring, it was no joke, you see, because we had to concentrate all the time, you see, on the moving finger that used to write without the written word, you see. It used to spell out the words, the moving finger. And so often, you see, Baba himself would express how fed up he was with his silence. And then we would also encourage him to break his silence, you see, when he was in that mood. And one day, to our great surprise, he called us and he said that today he has fixed the date to discard the use of the board. And, well, within myself, I don't know about the feelings of others, but I felt very happy about it, because now that which was, that instrument, that gadget which was so tiring, the resultant effect of it was so tiring, that now that Baba is discarding it, well, it will give relief to Baba and to the persons who interpreted the board, you see. But then I hadn't the foresight, you see, of what would happen afterwards. And then when he discarded the board on 7th of October 1954, the whole thing came to a standstill. There was no conversation, nothing of the sort, you see. Everything came to a standstill. And we used to sit in presence of Baba and just gaze at him, and he used to gaze at us, that's all. Sometimes there would be a smile passing by, or something, just gestures of helplessness on the part of the mandali, you see. You know how the gestures are like this, what to do now? We would speak to him and he would just remain gazing at us. That's all. So then I, who in the heart of my heart felt that it would be nice now if Baba were to discard the board, felt that I missed the board, you see. And it would have been so nice if he had continued like that. Some weeks passed by, and then he started preparing to go out on tours, you see, and especially there was a time fixed for his going to Pandharpur, that famous place of pilgrimage over here where Ghadge Maharaj had invited him. And well, I was in a fix, being near Baba, naturally people would be surrounding Baba and I would have to say something. And Baba might mean something and I would say something else, you see, that wouldn't be good and nice. So I was the one who felt the pinch most at that time. And I then told Baba about it, about my feelings. And he says, he just nodded his head. And again a week or two passed by. One day on his own, he called me by his side and made me sit down and said, he started conversing with me, you see, with his gestures. And I could at once understand, you see. I told Baba about the difficulty, of course, I told him. So he just, at the time, did not pay any heed to it. But all of a sudden, after a couple of weeks, he called me and started giving this special gestures for every alphabet, English alphabet, you see. And then he taught me, all in silence, about the alphabets that he would, the signs for each every alphabet. And then the conversation again started, resumed. And the first time that publicly his gestures were used, you see, and interpreted was at Pandharpur, in the public. What is it? Because of the sweetness with which he had said that, you see. Something very important, something very live. It was not just a tall talk or casual thing. It was so close. You see. Therefore, it has a lasting impression on my mind. I can even visualize the thing. He's sitting there, and the crowd there, and the sweets nearby, and the people there, and throwing. Sometimes he would appear, he would make us feel that he's so close, so accessible. And then sometimes he would appear to be so far, far away from us, inaccessible, impossible to be, to have a hold of him. And sometimes he would make himself so familiar that we forgot in his own presence who he is. And that would be very often.
Very what?
Often. We used to forget. Because of his closeness to us, we used to forget who he is. He would make us forget. And those are the moments when we lost him. And there were many such moments, not many moments, but many years. The moments got themselves multiplied into years, you see.
And that's all I care about. I mean, in relationship to Baba, and when I think about Baba, that's what I think about. And you know, I can't get into anything else. Like that's all that matters.
Yeah. I know that. I know it. I know it. And you are so blessed to have that feeling, Hetty. That's a great treasure that you have to hold on to, and I'm sure that there will soon come a day when he will give you a present, a gift, a boon of this. Hold on to this tenaciously, you see.
Hold on to that grief?
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought that, like, we're supposed to be cheerful and all that.
But what does it mean? What Baba means by being cheerful is not that you should just laugh loudly like a madman laughs, you see. Hold on to it with a secret feeling, a feeling within you, a sacred and a secret feeling within you, that he will definitely give me the boon, you see. That cheer within you of the assurance, you see, that he has given, that whosoever remembers him wholeheartedly, continuously, will surely get him. So that secret that you have within you, you see, of the fulfillment of your longing and the knowledge of his assurance should make you cheerful within, you see. It's not that Baba doesn't want us that we should just laugh and just smile and put our white teeth in front of him. No. Have a cheer in our heart. Cheer in the sense which in other words is an assurance that he has given us. The conviction of his assurance is that cheerful front that we can have before him. It is far away. You feel it in the beginning, it's far away. That feeling is there, no doubt about it. I can quite well realize, you see, what you are feeling within yourself. But this longing that you are blessed with, this loss that you are blessed with, is really something very great. Hold on to it tenaciously, and I'm sure he will fulfill your longing. That's the only thing is what is wanted, you see. And once you get him as you want him, well,
yeah, but
your strength
talks about, like, now that Baba's not in physical form, like we're supposed to be wanting something else, right? And I just don't. I mean, I don't, you know. I mean, I get the impression that, like, we're supposed to want Baba in a different way now, that, like, the concentration should be on something besides...
Something abstract.
Form, yeah.
No. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Why not? And all that we, human beings, in from time immemorial, all that we can gather and collect is the stories of those who have longed for His physical presence. Never once in my lifetime, I have gone through a lot of literature, Hetty, never have I found that anybody who has been a devout worshipper of God, the abstract and absolute, have given us anything which has pierced our hearts. Only those who had longed for His physical presence and who lived in that longing, and eventually their longings were fulfilled by His grace and compassion, have given us, what do you call that, the real substance, the real gift that has satisfied us, that has somehow or other given satisfaction to our longing, that appetite to know more of Him. And we have learned much from them who have, whose longings have been fulfilled, you see, for His physical presence, for His physical proximity. Where in the world, where you have got any literature there, you have got so many instances and so many cults and religions and things, you see, that they only aim at the abstract and the absolute worship, you see, and remembrance. But we don't get anything from them. It's there, it's all right. Philosophically it's all right, everything is there. But for human beings, for souls that have been informed like us, we are in forms. We can only feel the we can feel His tangible love only through form, through His being, through His person, you see. And our longing can make Him manifest for our sake, for your sake, not for the world. He is so capable, so kind, so loving, so compassionate, that even for a single soul who craves and longs for His presence, He has manifested in the past. And He continues to do so. And that's how the spiritual history is enriched, you see, by their experiences. Not by those who follow the abstract, follow Him in His abstract and absolute form, no. Spiritual history has never been enriched by that. You must have something tangible, something more personal. We are persons and we want something personal for ourselves. And how blessed you are, you see, to have that longing. So don't let it go. Let it grow. Let it grow. Same thing is the problem with Wendy. Said, let it grow. And you are blessed like that. Very rare you get such things. Otherwise there are people who hear of Him and they feel that they have missed Him, and then they think of Him in the abstract and in the absolute, and they want to follow His orders and instructions. That's all good. That's good. That's good. But that longing, that craving to have His physical form, as you said, do you know what you have said, you see, to me this morning? But what else is there to ask when you have the form of Him? That has touched me deeply, you see. That is the thing that, I don't know whether you read it somewhere, there was a time when Baba asked us, what do you want of me? Who am I? What do you think of me? So what is there to think of? And people gave, different people had their different thoughts and all that. My answer was, Baba being Baba is all in all to me.
Yeah.
What is there? He may be a man, he may be God, he may be devil, what do I care? If Baba is Baba, that's all to me, that's all, nothing more than that. So that's the true thing, you see, that's the, for some, of course. And for some, there are some things, for some things, you see. But I think this is more tangible, this is more towards the truth, I should say. No, you should. He resurrects for every individual. There is this thing called resurrection.
Yeah, I know.
And that resurrection has been misinterpreted in Christianity, but this resurrection is there. And after resurrection there is the ascension, and not of him. He is ascending and descending all the time. Our ascension is there after his resurrection. He resurrects for every individual. Already he has given us signs of his appearances to those who have longed for it. Didn't I tell you the story of the old woman who was blind? There was a blind woman, you see, near about Arangaon village, some miles away from there in a village, blind from her childhood. She had heard of Baba because the whole village had heard of Baba, and she heard stories about Baba, and she developed deep faith in Baba. She had contacted Baba when she was young. Then one day she hears that Baba has dropped the body. It was a shock to her. And in that shock, you see, she begged the people to take her there. She not being not only blind, but being absolutely helpless and poor, very old, and poor too. If she had some wealth, you see, she could have used her wealth to run to Baba at the tomb there. But she was helpless. Nothing was there. And people around, you see, they were also helpless. They were shocked. All, each one to his own, ran towards the tomb there, you see, for Baba's darshan, the last darshan. She was left all alone there in her hovel. Nobody cared for her. People there, some of them stayed there for 3 days, 4 days, some stayed there for 8 days that we were there, that Baba's body was exposed. When all of them returned, she heard the whole story and she wept. She had never seen Baba's form, and she craved and longed to see his form, but now there was no chance. She felt that Baba has dropped the body, now what's the sense? But her longing was unfulfilled. And she remembered Baba all these days, you see. Years passed by, 2 years passed by. Every year there would be Amar Tithi. She would tell people to take her, remember to take her there. And the youngsters, you see, those who were able-bodied and all that, and the village is poor village there. They promised her that they would take her, and every time they would forget. And some would not go, and some would go, but forget, take her. One day I had gone to Mehrabad for some work, to inspect something there, I don't know what it was. I sat down on the parapet of Baba's cabin, I just kept seated there, taking rest. And some men must have entered the tomb, and they came out after paying their homage to Baba. And one of them spotted me. Well, he was very delighted to see me. I could see that from a distance. And he came towards me with open arms. I stood up and he embraced me. He said, "I'm so happy to see you here." I said, "Fine." I did not know him. I may have seen him, but I don't remember anything. So people somehow or other from a distance recognize me, I can't recognize them. That's my fault. I don't know why, because so many thousands pass by. So now this is the story that I'm telling you has been narrated by the person who was very happy to see me at the spot there. So he tells me that he is very happy that he met me there today, that day. I said, "What's the cause of your happiness?" "Real happiness is there inside the tomb there." He says, "Yes, that's the story is of him." So then he narrates to me about this old lady who was blind from a childhood, and that how she had come in contact of Baba, and how she longed to see Baba's physical form, and how she missed it, and then how she was shocked when Baba dropped the body, and then nobody took her to the tomb, and how she is forgotten every time. And the last Amartithi, we again forgot to take, bring her to the tomb. This is what the man says. The last Amartithi, we again forgot to bring the woman to the tomb. But then, she, when we returned and thought of her, she was absolutely changed. There was no more that pain in her eyes or face, whatever it be, but we found, on the contrary, full of joy, a sort of bliss, so to say. And we asked her the reason for it, and the story she narrated was this. It says, when the villagers were not there, and on 31st, when the villagers had gone to Mehrabad for the Amartithi, she was all alone, sitting outside her hut, just by her entrance of the hut, longing to see Baba all the time, physically. But she knew of her handicap, being a blind woman. She said, well, you are God in human form, you are the avatar, you can do anything you like. People must be there, near your tomb there. They must be having a good time there. I just long to see you as you are. I don't want to see you as God, I would like to just see you as you were here on earth. And just then, she was rewarded, she says. And her reward was this, that's what she describes. The whole earth was full of light. She sees that now. With a whatever eyes she has, we don't know, but she sees this, and she describes this. The man is narrating all this to me now. And she says that light is not scorching, or it's not the heat or the light of the sun that she sees. It has a tinge of color in it. And that color goes as some sort of very cooling and calming effect on her system and her mind. And she is full of happiness, bliss, joy, and all of that.